America Weekend.
The name game. Shirley, 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 Bo Burley, Bonana, Fana, Bo Furley, Fee, Fine, Mo Merrily.
Welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Ed Kalenge.
I'm Christina Stoffo.
We all have our favorite bands, sure, iconic bands, iconic names, yes, in the world of music. But what if they weren't those iconic names? What if they were downright dopey when they first decided on what the band's name would be? We found this article from Rolling Stone, the worst original names of famous bands.
These are so funny,
so
though.
So we have the actual first name, then the final name.
Yes.
The first one on our list is Tom and Jerry. Now, when I think of Tom and Jerry, I think of a cartoon.
The old cartoon, right?
A cat and a mouse and the whole thing there. Tom and Jerry eventually evolved into Simon and Garfunkel.
Interesting. Where did that come from?
I have no idea. Simon and Garfunkel, just 15 years old when they started shopping their songs around the Brill Building back in 56. Realizing they didn't have the most marketable names in the world, Paul became John Landis and Arthur became Tom Graff. And they become Tom and Jerry. Now, this is weird because Tom and Jerry was a popular cartoon in the mid-50s. Everybody knew what they were. So the fact that they decided to just emulate this cartoon name is kind of weird.
Very weird.
So then eventually they become Simon and Garfunkel. The next one, the Square Roots.
Well, I'm glad that became The Roots.
Yeah.
I don't know where the square came from. So The Roots originated when Questlove and Black Thought were high school classmates in Philly. They called themselves Radio Activity for a school talent show in 89, which became Black to the Future, then the nerdiest of the handles yet, the Square Roots.
Square Roots.
Interesting.
Well, you know, it does, you know, all of a sudden you realize the guys are kind of smart. They could probably do math with the best of them. But then, you know, it becomes an encumbrance.
I say The Roots, a little bit more edgy, no?
Yes, much more edgy. Okay. Much edgier.
Yes.
The next one, this is an interesting one.
This is
Mookie Blaylock.
Huh.
Now, if you're a closet NBA fan, especially an old New Jersey Net fan from the late 1980s, you'll get this. The final name, Pearl Jam.
Interesting.
In October of 90, a new band from Seattle played their first concert at the Off Ramp under the name Mookie Blaylock, a New Jersey Nets player whose basketball card wound up in the tape case of one of their early demos. It was kind of goofy, admitted Eddie Vedder, but that first week we were too busy working on songs to think about a name. This was fine for a completely unknown band, but when they started to attract national attention and record an album, they could not continue to have the same name as a popular NBA point guard.
No kidding.
See, that's a copyright and a trademark infringement right there. Let's steal somebody's identity.
Yeah, right.
And make them the name of our band.
So where did Pearl Jam come from?
That's a good point.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
The story of how they came up with Pearl Jam has been much
mythologized.
Yeah, okay. Over the years, largely due to the fact that Vedder claimed it was after his grandmother, Pearl, who created
hallucinogenic jam.
Oh, really?
Grandma's cooking in the kitchen.
Well, we're going to have some of that Pearl Jam.
Wow.
Interesting.
And all of a sudden, Grandma gets a knock on the door one day, and Grandma goes away for 15 to 20.
I like this story.
So that's how they became Pearl Jam. Wow.
Interesting.
The next one, On a Friday, and they became Radiohead.
On a Friday. Okay.
That's kind of weird in the first place. They rehearsed after school, let out for the week on Friday nights, inspiring them to call the band On a Friday. You know, there's no thought involved in this.
No.
It's just, you know, a stream of consciousness.
What's so funny is that
what? You
think back, fan of a band, and you're like, wow, you really think about, where did they come up with that? Was it an interesting story?
Right.
Was it this, that, and the other thing? And
we it's practice
just
on
like,
Fridays.
Oh, yeah, we practice on Fridays. Okay.
So the group eventually, they were all fans of the Talking Heads, so they took their new name from the super obscure 1986 song Radiohead. I know that song. Does that make me super obscure?
No, I know
it
the
makes
Talking
me culturally,
Heads are.
It makes me culturally aware, I think. Anyway, the next one, the Obelisk.
Okay, the
Now
Cure.
That's a little, that's weird. That's
the
a little too esoteric.
The Obelisk.
The Sallow Goths, who would become the Cure, might not seem like the sort of blokes to name themselves for a large phallic monument, but that's just what they did when the then middle school students got together in the early 70s.
Okay.
Robert Smith was a background figure in the Obelisk playing piano, but he soon moved up front and took charge of the group's moniker. After a few more lineup changes and a couple of transitory names, Malice and Easy Cure, the latter of which the singer found too hippie-ish, then Smith dubs them The Cure.
Okay.
Which I always thought was a pretty interesting name for a band.
Yeah, no kidding.
And they had quite a run there in the late 1980s and early 90s.
I like how these things are getting cut short. You know, it's something longer and they're like, oh, we're The Cure.
And that's a smart move. The next one, Smile.
Smile. Turned into Queen.
Yeah.
Smile? Really?
Smile. Sounds okay. Like our headshot session of earlier today, but
so,
yes.
The name Smile simply cannot approximate the power of the music that the group's guitarist Brian May and drummer Roger Taylor would record with their next band, Queen. Okay, in his book, Queen, The Early Years, the author wrote that the group's bassist and vocalist, Tim Staffel, adopted the concept of a group called Smile as part of a college project and built a graphics campaign around it.
Wow. That's interesting. I mean, well, talking about veering away from the music aspect.
Okay, so we have here, it says that the concept of Queen is to be regal and majestic. Freddie Mercury, if you ever watch, you know, video of him on stage, he kind of had this very
regal, majestic
thing about
presence
him.
About himself.
Right, didn't he?
The next one, Atomic Mass.
Huh.
Now, that's actually a pretty good name, but eventually they changed their name to Def Leppard.
All right.
Now, I always thought Def Leppard was their shot at Led Zeppelin, or
right,
they wanted to be like them.
Sure.
It was Led Zeppelin-like in a lot of ways. Atomic Mass, defined first as the mass of an atom and second as a really bad idea for a band name.
Yeah, no kidding.
That notion did not deter a group of rockers from Sheffield, England, including bassist Rick Savage, guitarist Pete Willis, and singer Joe Elliott, from using that non-starter of a moniker.
Uh-huh.
Eventually, they wanted to change it, so Elliott snaps out of it, tells his bandmates about posters he designed in art class at school for a fake band named Def Leppard.
Well, there you go.
And again, it was a takeoff on Led Zeppelin. Now, here's a really interesting one.
I don't understand this at all. Or maybe I do.
Kara's Flowers?
Maybe I do, because the lead singer of this band...
You're not an Adam Levine lady?
I don't understand the appeal. I don't get it.
I know. You know what? I watch The Voice because I'm held hostage to do so by my wife and son. I don't get Adam Levine. Anyway, Kara's Flowers become Maroon 5.
Yeah.
Adam Levine and company had to start somewhere. They started as a suit-clad 90s alt-rock outfit called Kara's Flowers, a name that referenced a groupie who had a crush on all of them.
Oh.
That's kind of interesting. And so all of a sudden you decide you're going to actually call your band that.
Well.
Eventually they get themselves to Maroon 5.
Well. So. I don't know. Why would you name your band after a groupie?
Unless you're trying to impress more groupies. Unless this was quite a groupie.
Unless this was the groupie.
The ultimate groupie.
The ultimate groupie.
That would have become the ultimate roadie. And then you got yourself quite a situation.
Right. And then everybody's happy. Okay.
What about the Pendletons?
Okay. Well, this is the Beach Boys.
Yes.
When Brian Wilson began writing songs about surfing in 61, he'd hardly ever even touched a surfboard. So to get some credibility, he called his new group the Pendletons after the plaid wool shirts favored by the surf community. See, this just makes me laugh so much because, again, you think about the thought process that goes into naming a band.
Let's
and
name it
it's
after
something
a shirt.
So weird like, oh, let's name it after a shirt so we're in with the surfers.
Yeah. Yeah, What's next? The group called the 50-50 Cotton Pollies? That's a pretty good name.
I was going to say, there might be something.
If we ever
that.
Start singing, that will be the name of our group. This one is interesting.
Okay.
Sweet Children,
which
is, not again, not bad. But when you think about it, they become Green Day.
Uh-huh.
So I guess they were Sweet Children when they began the group.
I don't know. When Green Day took the stage at Cleveland's House of Blues days before their induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame earlier this year, everyone but the most hardcore fans in attendance were confused by the name on their drum riser, Sweet Children.
That's actually pretty cool.
That is interesting that they kept it.
Right.
And you know what's so cool about that? I consider that like a little Easter egg. You know what an Easter egg is? Like in a movie, on a DVD.
Okay.
If you hit a sequence of things on your remote control, a secret trailer will pop up or something like that. It's called an Easter egg.
Right.
So I think this
is an Easter egg.
Is one of those things for the diehard fans.
That's
and I feel like it's kind of like a...
That's a good
point.
Hey,
thanks, guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And it's a nice throwback to their beginnings, their humble beginnings.
Yeah.
They started in 1986. They were all just 14 years old, gained a tiny following, and then eventually they go to Lookout Records, and then they switch it to Green Day because they had to avoid confusion with fellow California rock outfit Sweet Baby.
Baby.
You can only have so much sweet music at one time, I guess, and you confuse the chart. So
and Green Day has a cult following.
Oh, they have quite a cult following.
They sure do.
And they got themselves into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame quite quickly.
They sure did.
There are groups that have been out there since the 60s and can't still sniff the Hall of Fame.
I know.
Yet Green Day is in.
The Polka Tolk Blues Band?
Yes. Is?
Turned into Black Sabbath. Wow, what a big change that is.
Black Sabbath started off doing polkas? Who would have thought?
Polka
Metal.
blues.
You gotta love polka metal.
All right, Ozzy. When the band first came together in 68, they were doing blues rocks numbers under the name Polka Talk Blues Band.
Tony Iommi told Osbourne it was terrible.
No kidding.
We can't have a name like this. You know, wouldn't it be awful if they decided to go out on the road and practice under this name? They're doing this kick-ass metal music, and all of a sudden, people see this, and what do you have? You have a bunch of 45-year-old Polish people showing up in plaid shirts ready for accordions. They didn't use accordions.
They're not there to see the Prince of Darkness.
No, they're not. Talk about confusing your audience.
Well, I'm glad they changed that name. Some of these I can, you know, go either way, yeah. But this one I'm pretty confident that it wouldn't have worked.
We'll just scan through a couple before we go to break.
Oh, what
the Gollywogs became Creedence Clearwater Revival,
I'm so glad that Creed changed their name from Naked Toddler.
Which is very creepy on many different levels. The Salty Peppers became Earth, Wind, and Fire. And then two more. Pud became the Doobie Brothers.
Okay.
And the other one, Burn the Priest, became Lamb of God.
Do you know?
Boy, talk about going the other way down a one-way street.
Do you know that at Seton Hall, I was on their radio station. We played Lamb of God on the radio, because it was a metal
station. It's a metal station.
It's a metal station. Do you know we couldn't call that? We had to call it Lamb of G.
Really? See that? Because when the program director at a metal station is a priest, you got trouble left and right.
Yeah.
Stay with us. More to come. I'm Ed Kalecki.
I'm Christina Stoffo.
And this is America Weekend from the Envision Radio Network.
America Weekend.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau, so call now. 800-289-1668. That's 800-289-1668. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-289-1668.